Hello there, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Industrial IoT Solutions Using Microsoft Azure IoT Suite. Boy, if there's a more popular topic in our space, I'd certainly like to hear about it, because people are really clamoring for information on anything to do with industrial IoT, and for good reason, which is what you'll be learning in the next hour or so. We were at Embedded World last week, and it was a topic that everybody wanted to talk about. Industrial IoT in particular has its own challenges. Many of those have to do with, if your network goes down even for a short amount of time, you're looking at anything from losing lots of money to potentially losing lives. So industrial IoT is something to be taken very seriously. My name is Rich Nass, and I am the brand director for the Embedded and IoT franchises at Embedded Computing Design, and I'll be serving as your moderator today. On this webcast, you'll be hearing from Gordon Smith, a technology strategist for Microsoft. He'll be going through all the elements of Azure, and he'll show you how it'll apply directly to your industrial IoT application. But before I do that, let me go over some of the housekeeping items. The entire presentation will take roughly 40 minutes, give or take a few, and that'll leave us plenty of time to answer your questions, and we will answer as many as time permits. You'll find on your console window a button that allows you to enter your questions in real time, and as I said, we'll answer as many as we can when Gordon finishes his presentation. If we don't get a chance to answer your question, somebody will get back to you after the e-cast is over with an answer, so every question will get answered. If you have a question that pertains to the e-cast operation itself, like if the slides aren't advancing or the audio doesn't sound right, put that question into the box and one of our technicians will respond to you that way. On the console, there's a button to enlarge your slides. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You can also click the forward to a friend button if you want to send an email to somebody about this event. Note that this eCast will be posted online within 48 hours, and an audio podcast will also be available. Okay, enough for me. Let's get into this. Let me introduce our expert speaker. That would be Gordon Smith, who started at Microsoft in 1993. He was initially a software engineer slash architect on various database technologies. He left Microsoft in 2002 to start for a partner in the embedded space as their lead software technology strategist. He returned to Microsoft in 2009 to deepen his focus on a variety of industry verticals, technologies, and partners. And today, Gordon acts as the global lead on digital signage for Microsoft, as well as helping Avnet realize their global ambitions in the IoT space. And I could say for sure that those ambitions are certainly global. Okay, without any further ado, here's Gordon. All yours, Gordon, take it away.
Great, thank you, Rich. I appreciate that. So what we're going to be talking about today is the Microsoft Azure IoT Suite and a couple topics that surround that. So a lot of these presentations that you'll see always start off with a lot of big numbers. I'm going to try to avoid a lot of the big numbers and stick to the meat of the conversation. But I do want to make sure that I set up the context. So part of the reason why this is such a hot topic lately, as Rich was referring to, is just an awful lot of momentum, both from interest and hype, as well as implementation and return on investment. So according to a recent IoT survey, over 70% of the companies involved in that survey were very active in IoT. Of those, the majority of the reasons that they were going in that direction wasn't just to adopt a buzzword or a fad. It was really to make sure that they're growing revenue and growing their profits. And of the total number of people that responded to survey, predictive maintenance turned out to be an incredibly high focus area. I believe that as we continue down the IoT path over the years to come, we're going to see more and more situations like predictive maintenance, things that you can view of as more of a horizontal solution, become more and more prevalent. Given that belief, we wanted to make sure that we at Microsoft are doing our part to enable the ecosystem to adopt those horizontal platform type of advancements to make sure that companies in various verticals have a much easier time getting to pretty quickly and focusing on their value proposition. And we see this in an awful lot of different areas. We tend to focus in these six primary areas when we talk about our solutions and when we strategize and what we want to build and why. Obviously, there's a conversation around devices and technologies that we want to put onto devices for security and for other interesting reasons. There's also gateways. I think IoT gateway has probably landed as the first very very hyped and very real IoT type of device to help connect devices that in the past perhaps were generally speaking not connected to the cloud, but using that as a technology to connect them and make them relevant. And then data is the currency. What you can glean from data, being able to aggregate and understand trends and really analyze the data is hugely important. So being able to gain those insights, if you're moving gigabytes or terabytes of data back and forth, what does that actually imply? What action should we take based off of what that data is telling us? And then ultimately informing or dispatching people to affect that change. So whether it's command and control back to the original devices, or maybe it makes sense to send out a field service technician, or if it's just dashboards in the corporate office so people can understand what's happening with their solutions once deployed. So we look at all of those vectors when we think about the technology solutions that we want to bring to the market for the ecosystem to adopt in their vertical solutions. And this is part of the reason why we decided the Azure IoT Suite was a good way to go. So making sure that we do focus on securing the entire solution from end to end, so not just boot up of the device to when the OS takes over and make sure that there's a secure stack for the application to run, but really making sure that we can secure the communications between device and device and device and cloud, and then from cloud to back-end service. So the entire end-to-end needs to be secure. You need to be able to start it very quickly, get prototypes up and working quickly, making sure that it's a very open solution. So we firmly believe in supporting the ecosystem at large to enable people to connect a variety of devices, not just Windows devices. So these could be Android or Linux or whatever makes sense. And these can be with proprietary interfaces, perhaps using a translation gateway to make those conversations happen over internet standard technologies and then translate back on the return end or whatever makes sense to connect all those devices together. And then focusing on scalability. So I think a lot of people, when they hear about IoT, they always hear about some prototypical use cases where you have millions of devices, maybe trillions of devices, and it all sounds wonderful. And then they start to think, hey, in my solution, I have dozens, maybe hundreds of devices. Is this Azure IoT thing overkill? And the answer is no. We make it so it not only scales to very high capacity, but can also scale to very low capacity and charging appropriately. It doesn't have to be a big, expensive solution that would not be maintainable in a more modest implementation. So we want to make sure that we focus on end-to-end from solution scale and also to the topology of what's trying to be solved for the solution. So the Azure IoT Suite, when we started looking into what do we want to deliver and why, we really broke it down into these three main pillars. We wanted to make sure that we could connect and scale with efficiency. And the way we decided to do that was deliver some pre-configured solutions. And what that means is really it's a template. And mainly right now we have two templates. But what those provide is a quick startup provisioning to the most common IoT scenario requirements. In this case, it happens to be predictive maintenance and remote monitoring. And we deliver that to you in an open source manner so you can extend it or change it as you see fit. We definitely believe in having a SDK that contains heterogeneous agent libraries As I mentioned before, this is not just a Windows-only solution. We want to make sure that we can connect new devices as well as legacy devices, because there are plenty of solutions out there already which very closely mirror the aspirations of IoT, but were created in a time where we just happen to use different vocabulary. So we want to make sure that those libraries are available, that the SDKs are documented, and it's cross-platform and multi-language support. That allows you to easily flash devices and create those custom agents that you need using open source libraries. We also want to make sure that we could connect and control devices very easily, handling device authentication, and make sure we have secure two-way communication between the cloud and device. In that central pillar, we want to make sure that we enable people to analyze and act on that data, so to be able to set thresholds and alert limits and values and be able to process alarm jobs over big data. So make sure that we have a very robust platform for that event processing. We also want to make sure that people can implement predictive analytics and algorithms across historical as well as real-time data for a variety of purposes. Data is only interesting if you can make heads or tails of it. It needs to be meaningful in some way. And one way to do that is through data visualization. So we do have very easy tools to visualize big data on dashboards and create reports for those business decision makers to make the decisions that they feel necessary to ensure efficient operation of their solution. And then in the third pillar, it's very important to recognize that this is not just an architecture where you want to throw everything in the cloud and everything lives only in Azure and the only thing you can do is the capabilities of Azure. That's a little too limited. What we view is Azure is a platform that can and should be used to interoperate with other backend systems and help facilitate your workflow. So being able to integrate alarms and real-time processes and being able to elevate attention within either new line of business applications or even existing line of business applications. And make sure that there's a very robust mechanism to be able to broadcast notifications and commands to those devices. So doing so either by identifying specific devices or a set of devices, perhaps by geographical boundaries or other mechanisms of identifying a target audience. And then making sure that dashboards and data are available, but also be able to control access and security to those devices. Make sure that you can configure thresholds and alert configurations for being able to have predictable and secure access to those devices. And this slide builds, and I had forgotten that it did, so I'll skip past that build. So I did want to talk a little bit more in depth about those two pre-configured solutions that I talked about. And first, we're going to talk about remote monitoring. So this is a screen capture that I took when I went to our website. So this is an actual screenshot showing how easy it is to start provisioning that solution. So you can go to this and try it yourself. We have a provisioning portal that's at www.internetofyourthings.com. This particular page you can get directly from www.azureiotsuite.com. So when you have an Azure, a Microsoft Azure account, you can get to this provisioning portal. Users can then select the type of solution they wish to deploy that's relevant to the requirements of the IoT system that they're trying to create. Provisioning takes about 10 minutes on average. There's going to be a number of virtual machines that are spun up and configured, and the operating system's installed in there, et cetera. And then other platform as a service services that get spun up. All of those woven together to give you a starting point. You can view it as a template. So that gives you the ability to rapidly spin it up, take a look at the open source that we use to do so. You can configure the dashboards, et cetera, later as makes sense for you. As we do in the future, consider other types of horizontal capabilities that are going to be common across a lot of IoT solutions, we'll add more and more of these pre-configured solutions to that configuration portal. And then with this, just showing kind of the next step, you would select remote monitoring, and then the backend products and services are automatically initiated and configured. You can have multiple subscriptions for different requirements or utilize different pre-configured solutions simultaneously depending on what your needs are. So in other words, you can prototype multiple projects, perhaps for multiple customers, multiple solutions that you're trying to do all within that same portal. So when you've created the solution that you want, you would click launch, and then you would have that solution provisioned for you. So the Azure IoT Suite allows you to view and modify those subscribed solutions, run multiple simultaneous subscriptions, be able to create new subscriptions, and also be able to remove or delete solutions from the from your portal. And then this is showing a sample dashboard. So it's leveraging Bing Maps up in the upper left corner, as you can see, and then it has some other visuals and some data showing data analysis over time. So the as I mentioned before, it does ultimately present the user with an open source, fully customizable dashboard. The intention is to really summarize that KPI information that the business decision makers really will care about, rolling up the health status of devices and assets all connected to this service. An overview also shows the number of devices connected and various performance information about those devices in the field. The mapping, as I mentioned, is shown graphically. That's very critical to understand a remote monitoring solution because a visual, especially on a map, really tends to solidify the idea in those business decision makers' minds about how to and where to deploy resources if necessary to send a truck or to evaluate how their solution is being used. If you haven't heard of it before, we have a tool that we call Power BI. It's a very intuitive and powerful graphical tool that we're using in this dashboard to show these graphs and to really have a lot of interesting ways of visualizing big data. So be able to take huge amounts of data but boil it down into some cogent trends and messaging. So this is a bit of a higher level architectural view of what we include with this particular pre-configured solution. And I'll go over the individual pieces on this just to give you more background about what all this actually means. On the left, we have simulated devices. So what this allows us to do is have that parallelism in our development processes. So if you do want to spin up a solution and say, what would it look like if I had a couple dozen of these devices and a couple hundred of those devices, you can simulate those using C#, and have that whole process bootstrap while perhaps a different team within your company is actually making those physical devices. So that's parallelism. You can create those devices on Linux or iOS or Android or other platforms. We do provide C and Java libraries, so you can bootstrap that. Once you get into that center area, the first piece that you'll talk to is what we call the IoT hub. So this manages two-way communication between cloud and device and also creates a secure command and control channel between those two. It's also architected to handle very large numbers of devices. We do have different styles of hubs to connect into Azure that can be used for lower throughput needs. But this is one that is typical if you have high throughput, lots of devices, and a need for that secure two-way communication back and forth. After you transition from there, it goes into Azure Stream Analytics. So fundamentally, what that's used to do is create and manage jobs to recognize threshold values or detect alarm triggers, and then be able to send that information where it needs to be once that need is determined that needs to be escalated. But what this kind of also implies is, rather than the traditional model of taking a lot of data in, storing it in some database, and then sometime later, running a query over it and then trying to gain some insight from there. This is really analyzing data as it is streaming into the cloud and even before it's had a chance to be persisted. So being able to take more real-time action on trends that you can determine from that level. Moving through the stream analytics piece, we then make it to the event hub. So that's queried by a web job running an event processor host to determine where an alarm or alert needs to be pushed, such as sending an alert to a dashboard or for a human operator to take some type of action. On the right side of this sender box, it mentions logic apps. So that's really used to create more complex workloads and more namely integrate into other line of business or proprietary applications, whether that's something like Salesforce or whatever type of application makes sense given your backend environment. DocumentDB is also in this area. So what it's being used for in this particular solution is to be able to store the metadata and device properties for all of those connected devices. In this instance, those devices all have unique identities as is granted through that that Azure IoT Hub. So if we ever need to, if we determine that there's an issue with a particular device, we can send command and control to that particular device and not have to shut down a whole class of devices. And then we also have storage blobs that can be used for a variety of purposes. In this particular solution, what we're using it for is to store telemetry information and telemetry data. And then other tools such as Azure Machine Learning and Power BI can then access that information for data visualization or to do other types of advanced analytics. And then the web app is, you can conceive of that as a way of providing a portal for perhaps mobile a mobile workforce scenario where they need to take a look at a mobile version of the dashboard. And all the code is available in GitHub, so it can be fully customized to align with whatever needs you have for the application that you're running. And then this is another screenshot. This is showing, this is looking at the portal itself, looking at those various pieces that we had just discussed in that architecture diagram as being instantiated into your Azure subscription. And then through those, you can obviously change the resource group. If you wanted to move it, you can specify where you want to host that. And there are often very interesting reasons for hosting services or data in specific specific instances of Azure that we have across the globe. We do pay attention to geopolitical and tax boundaries and just a locality of reference because the speed of light does obviously affect latency. So deciding where, what data center to utilize for what aspects of this also becomes interesting, and we do give you that capability. So one example is with Germany. Solutions that are run by German-owned companies need to have their data reside within the boundaries of Germany. So if you wanted to be able to sell into that market, you would need to be able to have that, be able to fulfill that promise. So what we have done is make sure that we have a data center that is hosted in Germany and run by a German company, so we comply with those needs for that country and that government. And we take a look at those types of dynamics across the globe to make sure that we do provide a truly scalable and available platform for cloud development. And then quickly looked into to the second pre-configured solution we have, this one being predictive maintenance. So the overall goal for predictive maintenance is obviously to identify a target outcome. You want to make sure that in this particular solution, we're looking into the useful remaining life of an asset. So you'll be able to do that. You want to be able to inventory your data sources to make sure that you understand where all the data is coming from and the types of results that you can infer from what that data means. and then be able to capture and combine all that data and put it in a single place so you can do some analytics on that. So one way of viewing this is if you have, you know, 5 devices or, you know 50 devices in a particular place, they might not exhibit any causes of concern. But if you're able to leverage the data and insights of, you know, what happens with vibration or what happens with heat tolerance over a much larger number of devices, you can start to see trends of, oh, if I start to reach this vibration, I'm going to have a higher likelihood of this negative outcome. Or if we start to have this higher sustained temperature, you'll have a higher likelihood of a negative outcome. So be able to combine the data to take advantage of better scale. And then be able to model, test, and iterate. And really what we mean by that is, and you'll see this on a later slide as well, is being able to hypothetically propose a model that evaluates the risk of a device over time given what the data means, and then see how accurate that model is. And then you can generate another model and another model. So people have theories that this factor is more important or that factor is more important, or it's really the combination of these 7 factors that's important. You can run all of those as models, and you can compare their predictions and then choose the best model or the best model per area that makes sense for you. So that's really validating the model to make sure that it's not just a theory, that it actually does produce valid predictions in the real world. And then be able to integrate that into operations. So whether that is merely raising visibility of that to a dashboard or immediately dispatching a request to a service team or a communication to a customer, whatever the appropriate action to take would be. So once again, just showing a couple of screenshots just to show that this is not vaporware. So predictive maintenance can be selected as a solution from from that pre-configured solutions menu page at azureiotsuite.com. Selecting the solution will begin to provision it, so all the backend components will be deployed and connected to your Azure subscription. And in this particular case, we're simulating an aircraft, and more namely, engines on that aircraft. So I mentioned in a previous diagram about simulated devices. So here we're simulating aircraft engines. We don't expect everybody to go out and buy a jet to be able to test this. So the default dashboard looks like it is above. As you can see, there's not a lot of information quite yet, but as soon as you select start simulation, it will then start to have those simulated devices push data into the system. And then as you do that, it starts to analyze that data. So it populates the data from the sensors on those engines, and also compares that with historical information, and that's just sample information that we pre-populated, and then compiles the model. So the information then gets presented in this particular dashboard, and the asset continues to operate, and the data and the predictions keep coming in. Ultimately, what you care about in this particular solution is what's called RUL, or remaining useful life. And obviously, this is geared towards airplane. You would modify this to be topically relevant to whatever solution you're building. So as the data continues to come in, on this next slide, you can see that one engine is starting to dip below a threshold sooner than the other engine, so then it lights up in the dashboard. You could just as easily have dispatched a communication or a work item, et cetera. But in this case, the alert is triggered, and over time, both engines will be underneath that threshold. So this is really giving a great, it's very easy to understand at a glance dashboard on predicting that outcome. So this is taking a look at the architectural diagram, similar to the previous one that we looked at. You'll notice that they're remarkably similar, and there's good reason for that. Really, the piece that was added here was the Azure Machine Learning. So this is leveraging our machine learning assets to help make those predictions and look at at those trends and surface an ability to create those models and test those models and validate those models and provide the ultimate prediction of when it's believed that some action should be taken. So machine learning gets into data science, and data science is a term that usually scares people. It sounds very difficult to control or to understand. Realistically, what we try to do is acknowledge that it is a complicated space, but we make it easy. So we give a graphical environment to be able to stitch together the logic that is relevant. So in this particular case, here is a first pass flow diagram for receiving the inputs from the sensors and then applying the model, testing the results and iterating. And then that can be evolved. So in this particular case, we're testing multiple different models in parallel, and at the bottom it compares the results of those different models, and then it can choose which model is best. So I'd like to transition from this and talk a little bit about how to make this a little bit more real in implementation. So in other words, how do you get started? So we obviously believe in having an SDK so you can you plug in not just Microsoft assets, but any third-party operating system or technology stack. And for that, we give SDKs. So in this particular case, there's an SDK where you can add a new simulated device, and you can just simulate that, or a custom device where you can then indicate how real physical devices will integrate into your system. So those agent libraries give you the ability to quickly provision and add those real physical devices. You can also add the simulated devices with a custom schema to see what your solution might look like with your devices. And as I mentioned, not only do we believe in a platform agnostic approach from the device perspective, but also we support multiple languages, so this can truly be a global deployment. And then the SDK library, this should come across as a big mystery, but just to enumerate why we have it, we have the and what it's all about. So we have those agent libraries. They're very they're available in GitHub, so you can look at them. We do provide source, so they can easily be ported to environments where we haven't done the port yet. We do believe in cross-platform support. I think I've mentioned that quite a few times in this. And then I'd be able to not just connect the device, but interact with the device as meaningfully as it can be. So we understand when people say IoT has trillions of devices as a potential, usually when they say super large numbers like that, what they're referring to is the total sum of all sensors out there and in addition to all the computing devices. So we don't expect a temperature sensor to be directly connected to the internet in meaningful and conversational ways. We usually expect that to be handled through either treating it as a peripheral to some other device or somehow connected to a gateway that understands its native mechanism for communicating. So where the devices have the ability of being able to change parameters, we want to make sure that we do have that capability back to the device to help control the functionality of that device. And then be able to connect, as I was just alluding to, connected and non-connected devices. So the SDK does cover the notion of gateways and how to really connect all those previously non-connectable devices. It's an open source framework, so you can develop agents for your own devices as is appropriate. And also making sure that we can enable secure communication, either from device to cloud or from cloud back to device. Obviously, nobody wants to be the next story about an IoT device that got easily hacked. There were a few devices, I believe it was web camera related recently, where certain IoT devices were vulnerable. So we take security very seriously, not just with our own operating system, but also with the protocols and the SDKs that we put out there. And then OS support, whether it's a specific RTOS or Linux or Windows, Android, et cetera, We want to make sure that we're providing full support. I won't read this particular slide, but just to show that we do have versions that we've already tested internally in a variety of flavors of Linux or Windows or other. So whether it's Windows IoT Core, if you're looking for at a small device solution from us, or Debian Linux or other. And then documentation. We make sure that we have full documentation for how we interface with Node.js, if that's the technology that you're interested in, as well as our library to enable Java environments, as well as C# if you're looking more into a traditional Windows type of solution. If you are using C#, those managed agent code libraries, you require .NET Framework 4.5. And then it's very easy to connect those devices to pre-configured solutions. So we give step-by-step guidelines and the documentation about how to do that. So how to build it, how to integrate the SDK, and then how to configure it to connect securely to Azure. And there are examples of SDKs in GitHub, so you don't have to just look at an API reference and hope for the best. We give actual samples that you can use as starting points. And as you can see here, we have device SDKs for a number of devices that are out there. So it's not always a porting effort for you. We already have quite a few devices already covered. And this is just showing some sample code about what it looks like. So you would select your language, and we have multiple to choose from, and then you would take that code and start to customize it as makes sense for your device and your environment. So I did talk a little bit about Gateway before, so I'll be a little bit brief on this. But this review, and I think the industry in general, also has viewed as the first easy thing to really grasp, hold to, as a ecosystem-enabling type of solution. So if you're looking into creating a gateway, the market's hot right now. 85% of existing things were never really designed to be connected. And those things could just be those temperature sensors or vibration sensors that we talked about. So gateways can, in our perspective, can really achieve two things. One, it can connect to the previously unconnectable. And two, it can act as a translation protocol gateway. So devices that have some proprietary method of communication, how they represent the data, using a gateway to translate that into something that is typical for web traffic, send that to the cloud, bring it back, and then retranslate the results to be meaningful to the device. So those two type of gateways we see as being very critical to enabling a wide variety of solutions in the space. And it's a hugely growing space, the gateway opportunity specifically. So there have been studies that show that there's expected a 5 times growth of data by 2020, and half of the networks fully leveraging that. So I talked through this a little bit already. Customer benefits of having these gateways: be able to connect with legacy devices, some devices that weren't designed to be connected initially, as well as devices that were based off of a previous version of Windows or some version of Linux or Android or other. And then it also makes sense quite often to do some level of analytics on the edge, and we fully embrace that. So I think a lot of people view conversations where people talk about IoT as, wow, this sounds really expensive to upload terabytes or petabytes of data to the cloud and then do some analytics and return a simple answer. Quite often, that's not the model you want. What you want to do is some type of aggregation or some type of analytic locally, and then upload either data that is exception-based or data that is indicating a trend. So some type of representative sample of that data is often really architecturally a better approach. So if you want to take advantage of that edge and analytics, we highly embrace that and have technologies to help with that. Making sure we have a huge focus on security, because nobody wants to do that next big story and have their brand hurt. Then partner benefits for the SDK, these are pretty straightforward. If you embrace an SDK and extend that and then have that available to consumers of your device, it only helps with adoption of your device as well. So, you stand to have the same style of benefits that we do to make sure that there's a healthy SDK to access your capabilities. And I talked through most of these already. This is just giving some talk track to what I already mentioned. But you're making sure that the gateways are really fulfilling the promise of what they should be able to do in this space by stitching together all the assets that we care about. So the gateway architecture, a couple different models. I believe there's a slide after this that talks about the separate model. But modules being the brains of the gateway, each module performing some type of action, and then having chains of those to make sure that they can do analyzing of data locally or just the processing of data, whether that's passing it to a cloud or doing protocol translation as part of it. And then this is expanding on that story. So being able to, in this particular case, pass telemetry data to the cloud and do so in a way that is both secure, but also bringing legacy devices forward. So at a high level, we don't have a strong preference on what the underlying OS is for the gateway. We do believe that Windows devices do carry a number of benefits, but we understand it's a broad ecosystem. So making sure that we deliver an SDK to enable all of these scenarios is definitely a huge target for us. And this slide is where it starts to really talk more about the protocol translation that I mentioned. So to be able to leverage assets of existing deployments. A lot of feedback that a variety of companies initially received is that people didn't want to jump into IoT at first, and I'm talking years ago, a couple years ago, was that it was perceived that you would have to totally reinvest in all of your infrastructure assets, throw them away, upgrade the OS, do all kinds of stuff, and in reality, that's the opposite of the truth. We firmly believe that legacy devices are there for a reason, they're performing well for a reason, and we understand, especially in the industrial space, that long life cycle has huge, not just requirements, but benefits, and we want to be able to leverage that existing investment. So being able to translate those protocols is hugely key for our success. So the SDK, in general, reduces the level of work needed to be done by the device manufacturer, since a lot of that work is already done for them. When they put that on the device and hand it to the customer that's consuming this, assuming it's another solution provider as part of the ecosystem, at that point they're removed from the burdens of having to deal with the particularities of an OS or a particular device, and really focusing on the higher level abstraction of what they're trying to achieve, so enabling those developers to have a faster time to market. So we do have a variety of resources where you can go and get the repository for the Azure IoT Gateway SDK. We have instructions there and code for samples, so you can take a look there. We also have a few aliases that you can connect through if you have questions about how to implement and an SDK onto a gateway or how to leverage the gateway once it's created. So with that, I would invite you to start by visiting www.internetofyourthings.com to get started. And also the Azure IoT Suite.com if you wanted to go directly to that portal that I had a few screenshots of earlier. And with that, Rich, why don't we go back to you for some Q&A.
Wow, that was awesome, Gordon. I know I learned a lot, and what's nice is that you delivered exactly what we promised to the people. So I certainly thank you for that. So you take a quick breath, grab a cup of water or something, and we're going to start going through the questions. Okay. You ready, or you want to take another breath?
I'm drinking a little water real quick.
Okay. I'll ask while you drink. Okay, first question. Does Microsoft provide services or tools to build out the templates to many user, many installations, or is that usually done through an integrator?
Well, the reality is it's both. So we view our place in the ecosystem as providing a platform and not necessarily providing the end solution. Now, there are a few places where we do provide an end solution that's based on Azure, so Office 365 being an example, that we consider a software as a solution fully built on top of Azure. But when we're talking just about the Azure IoT space, we would refer people to understand what our capabilities are within the platform, and also part of that mission is to enable the ecosystem to have expertise to help create those solutions together. So Avnet's actually a great example. Avnet has partnerships with a variety of companies to help with those type of solutions. They also have their own expertise on understanding how to put all this together and how to transact it and what the architecture really means. So I guess the answer really is both. It can be through self-discovery, looking at our documentation and understanding both our infrastructure as a service capabilities as well as our platform as a service platform that we have to leverage, as well as leveraging the ecosystem of engineering partners that we have.
Very good. I was afraid you were going to give that answer that I hate. It depends. But, okay. Next question.
With most development topics.
Looks like you use SQL database. Can we use Mongo database?
Answer is yes. So with Azure, we do have a variety of our own assets there, like SQL Server, but we also fully support having other capabilities as well. So Oracle is in our is easy to deploy. Mongo is easy to deploy. You can have MySQL. There are a variety of database capabilities out there that you can leverage, whether it's a Microsoft or a third party. And then I should expand on that a little bit. Whether you wanted to include it on a gateway to handle some local edge analytics before connecting to the cloud, that's also possible depending on the third-party technology you're talking about. But then once it's in the cloud, we do absolutely promote and embrace the third-party ISV ecosystem that is thriving there.
Okay. For those of you out there, we still have some time, so keep asking those questions, and we'll answer as many as we have time for, and those that we don't have time for, we will get back to you with an answer. That's a promise. Okay. What specific ML algorithms does Azure use? Can you talk more about this?
Unfortunately, I'm not the best person to talk about that. ML can be a very heady topic. So if you're interested in diving more into that, I would recommend contacting me afterwards, and we can talk about your particular solution, and I can get you in touch with the data scientist types here at Microsoft to talk about what we offer there. But what I showed on the screen was just the UI for how to put blocks together. Once you have those blocks together, you can click into there and get more more customized with what happens within those blocks, so getting into the code, et cetera. But as far as what paradigms we follow, I'd have to leverage other resources to help with that.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's see. Next one. A lot of acronyms here. As I have been told, IoT devices use different protocols to communicate with servers, namely XMPP, MQTT, and DDS, etc. Would Azure IoT platform support all of these protocols?
Well, I know it supports at least a subset. I don't know off the top of my head all of the protocols that we support. So the answer could be yes. But I don't know specifically. MQTT, I happen to know off the top of my head, yes, we do support. If it's one that we don't, then it would fall into that translation protocol, the protocol translation topic that I mentioned before. We have done that with a variety of opportunities, especially in the industrial automation space, and it's worked very well. So if you do have a specific list, feel free to send that to me afterwards, and I'll research that for you. But architecturally, we can make it work.
Okie doke. Let's see. Can you be more specific about what you mean by operating system support on slide 27? Oh, we get to use that tool where we get to go back to slide 27. I'll do that. I like doing that. Let's see. Slide 27. Is it this one?
I think that's...
Well, that's a boring slide.
I think it's probably this one.
Okay. Oh, you mean the one that says 27. Okay, that should have been my first clue. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, I'm not sure if it was that one or perhaps this one. So could you repeat the question again?
Sure. The question was, can you be more specific about what you mean by operating system support? I guess the slide's not really necessary to answer the question.
Okay. So what we mean by operating support effectively is answered by our SDK. So what we try to do is make sure that we have a, at the most common level, it's going to be a C library that people can port to whatever platform they care about. And there's nothing terribly deep or interesting about what is in that SDK. It's really just a way of formulating messages that go over the internet to reach a cloud. So it's really helping to abstract away both the formulation of the message and the communication to the cloud service, but we provide that in libraries for libraries in C or Java that can be compiled into any OS that people see fit. So if they have their own custom proprietary OS, it would be able to be installed there. There was a slide where we listed a variety of platforms where we had done that compiling of that C library and tested it just with some hypothetical test apps that we have internally, just to prove that all of that works. So can it work on Linux? Yes. Can it work on five different distributions of Linux? Yes. Can it work in iOS? Yes. So we've done a variety of tests, but we don't claim to have compiled it on every OS that's out there, because that's a huge number. So we provide the source code, and it should be pretty straightforward to compile it and get it to work.
Okay. Let's see. How long does it take to support a new device? Are there any devices that typically cannot be supported?
That's kind of a loaded question, depending on what they mean by support. Generally speaking, the effort is pretty low. It depends on what extra they want to do with it. So if it's a device that did not natively have the ability of doing some type of control to it, then merely adding protocol translation on top of that isn't going to magically make that device capable of being controlled. But assuming that all the primitives are there, at that point, what you're really doing is just stitching things together, and that's pretty achievable. And this is all from the cloud perspective. If the question were really, what devices can I get Windows 10 IoT Core to run on, just as an example, that's a different type of question, and that really gets more into what silicon have we already ported drivers to, et cetera. But when we're talking about the Azure IoT space like this and with the SDK, we're really abstracted away from the silicon and the BSP conversation and really talking more about how do we enable applications on that device to communicate through cloud protocols. So
okay.
Short answer is it's pretty quick.
That was the short answer? Okay. Just kidding. Here's a question every marketing person would love to answer. Please explain what Windows 10 IoT is.
So you're asking an engineer the question, not a marketing person. But I play one on TV sometimes. So Windows 10 IoT is a family of products that we have that are intended to be utilized for IoT scenarios. That being said, we have three of them. We have Windows 10 IoT Core, Windows 10 IoT Mobile, and Windows 10 IoT Enterprise. Enterprise you can think of as Windows 10 Enterprise, and if you're not familiar with that, it's Windows 10 Pro with more features. The Windows 10 IoT Enterprise product is, you know, taking a Windows desktop that you're used to, making sure that we add some lockdown capabilities to it to make it, you know, secure and, you know, from the user perspective and relevant in the IoT space, and have that available. So, you know, the same driver ubiquity that Windows has. Windows 10 IoT Core, at the other extreme, is a version of Windows where we don't include parts of the Windows product. So it doesn't include the shell that people are used to, but it does have all the underlying capabilities of Windows. So it has the same security model, the same manageability model, the same programming model, but it's presented in a way where you're really going to have one foreground UI application if you have any UI applications at all, and then multiple background tasks that can run. So I guess in short is, it's Windows, but delivered in a way that's meaningful to IoT devices. And if you have more specific questions about your opportunity, I would recommend contacting Avnet. They have a lot of expertise in helping understand what is the, you know, the better choice for your scenario.
Well done. Okay, we're getting to it. We have about 2 minutes or so. Let's see, how about, will Microsoft be creating additional pre-configured solutions for cloud services?
The answer is yes. That being said, I haven't heard what those will be yet. I don't have insight into whether that is just a blanket statement of, yes, we aspire to do more when it makes sense, or if they actually have plans on what to do next. From my level, I don't have that visibility. But the general idea is what we're providing to those pre-configured solutions, if we were to make another one, the point of it is to accelerate time to market when it's a type of technology that can be applied horizontally. So I don't think we're, and this is my opinion, I don't think we're interested in going after specific verticals and having our own specific vertical implementation for things. What we're really interested in doing is making sure that we're delivering a very easy-to-use platform that can be used across a variety of verticals.
Okay. Last one, Gordon.
Okay.
Well, it's a long question, so bear with me.
All right.
What immunological algorithms, I'm not familiar with that, hopefully you are, what immunological algorithms or strategies are being deployed or planned to deploy beyond communication and identification security, protect against things that get taken over or spoofed, and introduce bad/dangerous feedback or control requests to other devices or control points? Got that?
I think I got the gist of it. So fundamentally, it's a security question. And when we view security, we think of two aspects. Are you dealing with contingency or mitigation? So in other words, are you trying to prevent security intrusion, or are you trying to understand what to happen after somebody does break into something? And the reality is, I don't care what vendor on the planet you talk to, you have to consider both. So when we look at the device perspective, we personally believe that Windows has the best security value proposition with how we work with silicon vendors, and we can protect the device from intrusion from when it boots until when the OS runs, and then has a variety of technologies that I could go on for an hour about on how to have a very secure computing environment. So that's one aspect of it. But you also have to secure the pipe to the cloud, and then you have to secure the assets in the cloud. If you look at Azure from a security certification perspective, we have more certifications than any other cloud vendor on the planet. I believe my slide might be old. It was a month ago. But at that point, I know we had 11 more certifications than the closest competitor. So we take security extremely seriously. That being said, we believe that every device should have a unique identity. So that if it is determined that a device somehow is hacked, whether it's Windows or others, that you have the ability of removing just that device, if that's what makes sense. Or if you do want to take the action of removing a class of devices, we have the ability of doing that. So we do look at security from both those perspectives, mitigation as well as contingency.
Fantastic. Well, we are up at the top of the hour, and I'm afraid that's all we have time for. As I said, if you asked the question and we didn't answer it, somebody will get back to you. You have our word on that. I'd like to thank Gordon for his fantastic presentation, and I'd like to thank Avnet for sponsoring this event. And, of course, none of these things would ever be possible without you, the engineer. Thank you all for attending, and have a great day.